Hello everyone, I am Srishti Singh and we at the Rural Post welcome you all for a new podcast session with our guest Sahithi Devi, a very young and enthusiastic gender equality influencer. She is also the co-founder of ImpactScientist.com, which creates awareness about gender equality by delivering socially impactful content through online, offline and partnership channels to align with the Sustainable Development Goal number 5 of the UN. Being a master's in social entrepreneurship from the Hult International Business School and having worked at global organizations for the same, she has been made the National Brand Ambassador of Sustainable Development Goals by the Confederation of Indian Micro, Small and Medium Enterprises, which is a great inspiration for us. She's working on two projects called Impact R and Impact Talks. Through them, she takes us to a journey with successful and groundbreaking individuals who are making an impact in the lives of women. Being a rural innovator, she firmly believes in being the voice of the unheard and bring the poorly represented gender of women to the forefront for a holistic development of rural India. We are so honored to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Srishti and the Rural Post. I'm really looking forward to our talk on rural innovation.
Even we are looking forward to this. So, talking about your journey, what motivated you to work for the rural women? We would love to hear any personal or favorite story of yours about them. Also, what are some of their strengths we can learn from?
Right. So, Srishti, I was I finished my master's from San Francisco and I came back to Hyderabad and I started working for an organization. And initially, when I quit my job and I started my own website, as you mentioned, which is ImpactScientist.com, so the major point, the element which kind of inspired me to take up gender equality as an issue is the more and more potential I could see the woman could churn out and the statistics which were, coming out about the role of women in the Indian economy and what skill could do to the country and what could happen if women are, given the right education. So this journey kind of, pushed me to relocate from a city to a village where the population is 7,000 people. So I could see the impact of what I could do. I felt that my education and my past experiences and whatever I have inside of me could probably bring a lot of change here and I could learn a lot. And I think each and every woman I have met in the journey through my field visits has been an inspiration for me to relocate. And after relocating is when my life started again, because that is when we are able to understand the challenges and the ground level operational difficulties. So it is really fun to explore, interview, research and understand the scope of what these women can bring to the table. To begin with. So it is a very wholesome perspective and it really depends on, the person who is creating a business solution, using these women to make the best out of them.
Yeah. So would you like to share any strength these rural women possess from which we can learn from?
The resilience and the conviction they have. Like there is a they don't really prioritize anything else if they believe in an idea. Yes, it definitely takes a lot of time to establish, a relationship, a true relationship with a village dweller. But then once if the relationship is established, the kind of integrity, the kind of teamwork, the negotiation skills which women have here, the bargaining skills, the negotiation skills, in fact, the sales skills, if you could use them in the right way. And they are really ready to give you 24 hours in a day to the cause you're working on. And like, for example, there were these organic plates which are made of one of the leaves which comes from the forest. So I met women who were making these leaves. So when I met them, they were telling me that, you know, we make 200 leaves in a day. Like they stitch 200 leaves in a day and they're paid 20 rupees or 15 rupees as a wage. So all they were saying is we can sew, we can do embroidery, we can, you know, manage rural tourism like homestays and cooking or, you know, teaching tourists how to cook. So like the more I understood for survival, they're doing so much. And ultimately, when their skill is, you know, reaching the market, it is going through 5 or 6 middlemen, you know, and then the prices are so high. So they have a skill. And when I say skill, they are ready to learn anything you can train. You, if you give them 10 days of training and if you give them the raw material, the problem is more than 70 to 80% of the rural women don't feel comfortable to step out of the house. Yeah. So if we can use them, you know, from where they are within their ecosystems, so we need to, you know, kind of balance, create trust in their community, families. So to unlock the potential and that skill or the conviction which the woman is coming forward to put into your skill or business is usually obstructed with the lack of awareness or lack of education or the social stigma or the gender equality. So, you know, the strength is not really strength if it is not supported by the right factors. So I really would say that, yes, skill is the strength for these women, but it is unable to be used to the fullest.
Yes, I agree. We have a lot to learn from that. And I'm sure our audience will also appreciate these qualities which you mentioned, especially the quality of resilience these women show. So, Ms. Savithi, we got to know from one of your articles, and also you have mentioned that you have relocated to a village which is called Malikipuram near Mori, which is India's first smart village. You also mentioned that due to rapid urbanization, Indian villages are suffering for coexistence. Why do you feel so? How does your venture of Impact Hours and Impact Talks aim to mend these gaps?
Right. So Impact Hours was basically writing stories about social entrepreneurs who are mostly women across the world, or men who are impacting, you know, women through their products. So once I shifted from Hyderabad to Rajahmundry, which is a, you know, which is a town with an airport. So I stayed there for 1 month. And from there, I was, you know, locating what are the local products which are created by the women in East Godavari. I took East Godavari district as my pilot project to understand the products and the services which involve women in the supply chain. I mean, that is when I came to know about this NGO called Smart Village Movement, which is located in India's first smart village called Mori. So in that village, you know, every house is provided with internet, and the weavers were able to sell their saris and fabric through, you know, Etsy and Amazon initially. There were some operational difficulties later. So as a part of this project, I traveled once from Rajahmundry to Mori to study the cashew industry and to study the weaving industry. And when I met the weaving family, the weaver's family, I felt that this is where I want to be. And I don't want to, I don't want anything else around me. Like, I just want to stay in this village and take forward my idea through, you know, taking weavers as the pilots, because that was the day I came to know that there are 25,000 weavers, and not even one weaver is training or wanting their child to become a weaver, which means that is almost an endangered skill. So like how we are talking about tigers today, we'll be talking about handloom fabric tomorrow. So I think that was the I was looking for a product. I was looking for a product through which I can take the mission forward. I was looking for that one thing which, you know, strikes coordinates with me, because I cannot just continue to write stories, because the more I was writing stories, I could understand the problems, and then I wanted to bring a market solution for them. So through my pilot project, I'm going to launch an impact store which is going to be based out of Malkipuram. So this has all happened around Malkipuram. So initially it was Hyderabad to Rajahmundry, and 1 month of Rajahmundry, and then the villages pulled us in. Me and my husband both, we relocated here to take forward the healthcare and impact scientist together.
Yeah, and I have also seen many of your Impact R videos which you have put on YouTube. They were quite insightful. Like just now you talked about this biodegradable plate making of Korukunda village. Like after listening to you, I'm sure there might be many young rural preneurs out there who are just starting with their journey. So what suggestions would you like to give from your experiences?
Right. So I think, as I said, education supports our ideas, and education would support the way we want to execute the solutions in the rural economy. So it begins with a very difficult social structure. So the society is definitely still divided on the basis of religion, caste, money, and the class of people and women and man, and availability of resources, availability of connectivity. So these are the major things. One cannot come to rural India and say that I want to work with villages and begin with complaining about these 15 or 10 things, which are but for not very obvious to take on with if the journey has to begin in the rural segment of India. And secondly, I think it is very important to constantly update. Like, see, I've studied in San Francisco. I came back to Hyderabad and then to the village. But I believe in constant learning. I would never stop unlearning and learning in this process, because I would use concepts like design thinking, which is a human-centric approach to problem solving. So I am using design thinking to understand, what is the need for society here, rather than pushing my solution and my idea into the local market here. I'm trying to understand the needs of the rural markets, and then I'm going to, customize my solution according to the needs. Usually what happens is, because it is a vulnerable segment, somebody powerful or somebody with a financial capital, it is easy for us to come and pilot our ideas here. But each pilot can leave a very huge impact if it fails, or, people lose trust easily, and it is really hard to gain the trust of the village dwellers. So I think these are the major factors which I came across, and concepts like design thinking and using the framework of sustainable development goals and constantly updating oneself, and also knowing what to filter out and unlearn in the process, will really help one look at rural entrepreneurship in a very advantageous and an optimistic way.
These are some great insights for many young minds out there. Thank you so much for sharing them with us. So you have also spoken about how education empowered you to imagine and ask questions. According to you, which one would be more beneficial for the women you work with? Intellectual freedom through education, or financial freedom through innovative entrepreneurship?
Right. So obviously, when you have posed the question, we both know that both the financial freedom and education go parallelly, and they're proportionally equal for an individual. But yes, I do know, because of the limited resources and limited time, because the girls are pushed for marriage from the age of 13 in a village, from the age of 13 or 14, with so many organizations now working on that. I think it came down to 16 or 17 years. Yeah, but that is like having a time bomb on a girl's life.
Yeah.
So yes, your question also makes sense, although both are important. I would say that financial freedom is subtly given by the government through dwakras and self-help groups, and there are so many initiatives run and so many campaigns and projects which are initiated by the government. So what happens is, when the reality is the family is below poverty line, and maybe the husband, for example, if he's a fisherman, he's you know, if they have an alcoholism problem, you know, these women will make a group. And then they will be a part of the Dwakra group and they'll, you know, go through so many trainings from the government's end. And they'll get this 10,000 rupees or 5,000 rupees saying that, okay, you buy a buffalo or you buy a sewing machine or you invest in a small shop or you stand on your legs and then you use this as a microfinance and take, you know, make a small stand on your own legs. So that is why the government is also trying to provide financial freedom to women, thinking that women can use their skill and sell their products in some way. But what happens is by the time they receive the 10,000 rupees, they have a debt of 25 or 30,000 rupees, which is sitting on their heads and dancing. So, yeah. Or the husband is waiting outside the office to just take that money off and just go away, because the woman would not have the power, or she would not have the power to take, you know, make a decision about what she must do, or, you know, whether she can use that money as a capital or not, doesn't really depend on the will and wish of the woman. So I feel in my personal experience, education is definitely more important. Although India is a skill-based economy, although skill can translate into money quickly, if not supported with at least basic education, a woman would not be able to have a voice for herself, and she will not be able to use resources like, you know, healthcare or security resources or digital resources. She cannot access to anything if she does not even have basic high school education. So education first, only then the skill could be used effectively.
Yeah, as you mentioned, a balance between both should be there, with the primary focus on education, so they are able to identify and make the best use of any financial opportunity available. So, taking it forward, as we all know that women throughout the world fight many battles for equal opportunities, many of which you mentioned just now, there are a few other issues as well which are faced only by urban working women, like the wage gaps, glass ceiling, glass cliff, gender stereotypes, sexual harassment, and so much more. Also, as per the 2011 census, rural women make up 81.29% of the entire female workforce in India. So, what challenges rural working women face? Since you have worked very closely with them, how different these challenges are from their urban counterparts, and how can we help them?
Yes. So, I think a couple of days back, I was working with one of our block coordinators what I came to know is we happened to meet five women who make jewelry with fabric and silk. So as I was talking to them, I asked them till which class they studied. And all the five of them said that they finished their first year degree, and that is when their parents have told them to discontinue their education because they would not be able to bring a man who's more educated than the girl for marriage. So there would be dowry issues and there would be other problems, for example. So these kind of problems can be, I think, filtered in an urban space. So if the girl wants to study, if the girl is interested, I think even the environment around her, the schools, the colleges, or, you know, basically the whole system around you would push you to do better. Here, it's not the case. If a woman is doing well, initially, the parents and the family will be very intimidated because they're scared of the attention. They would be scared of attention because it's very hard to process being different and unique in a village, because everyone will question. And I think the whole village is woven on a very vulnerable fabric of what society will think, what my neighbors will say, or what if the girl does not get married? What if she's doing very well? People might think that she is very, you know, we might not be able to afford her marriage. These are the kind of problems, very basic problems, you know. Hunger is a problem. Sanitation is a problem. Sanitation, when I say, I'm not talking about the poor and rich here, but the access to information. Even though there is 3G, there is 4G, and everybody has smartphones, because it is all sudden, villages are the victim of digital divide also, which is not the case in urban in the urban spaces, because when I was there, I kind of felt that women can talk for themselves. But here, like people like us have to go in search for, you know, that silver lining which is hidden inside the woman. But then if you bring it out, you'll have to handhold it from the family, from the system, and from her own people, you know. So a woman being exceptionally amazing is also challenging in the rural space, if you can relate to what I'm trying to say. So these kind of problems, or finding the right person as your life partner, or the opportunity to self-discover or to travel or to access of information and education. So every service or every opportunity which is provided in the first place to a rural woman is often looked at as a luxury. So everything which most of the factors which are accessible to women in the rural urban spaces, I would say that all those factors are luxury still in the villages of India.
Yeah, these issues are of great concern. And I hope that after listening to you, our audience becomes sensitized of these problems which rural women face and comes up with some initiative at their own individual level to help. So we saw your message on how COVID-19 has caused disruptions in our societal structure, be it in terms of social, economic, political, or in public health domain, and how it is affecting Indian women in general. Please enlighten our audience that how COVID-19 is impacting the work and livelihood of rural women you work with, and again, what solutions do we have for that?
Right. So, as I am corely working with the weavers, I am taking weavers as an example to answer your question so that I can be more informative. Now, the domestic violence percentage has gone up. The ability to complain is very less here, and the access to complain is very less here. And the probability of somebody coming, as I told you, that women are skilled here. Most of the women don't go out to work unless it's farming. So while the markets are disrupted, while the customer behavior is changing, while we are all thinking of whether to buy products or not, so those kind of changes impact the rural spaces, because if somebody doesn't want to buy something in a city, you know, the trading or the supply chain will slowly start diminishing, and the raw materials which are provided to the weavers to create this their livelihood and survival will reduce. So ultimately, it will decrease the quality of life of the whole family, and that is when education and other things become high level luxury. So, for example, whenever there is market disruption, there is a problem to the, you know, to the point where foundation businesses are starting. So you might see so many malls right there selling so much fabric, but the handloom fabric, for example, which comes from rural India, in the last 2 months, hundreds and thousands of weavers are struggling with the, because they don't have the money to buy their own raw material to create saris, and then they don't know how to sell it, which means middlemen have to participate in this supply chain and somebody has to give them the raw material. So if somebody decides not to give because the market is not there, so all like a small change somewhere will disrupt the life for somebody here. So sometimes the changes are that big. So like that, it could impact, you know, the market changes can impact the rural markets. The level of domestic violence, which increases, and the ability of not being able to complain will, you know, lower their consistency to stand up for what they want. Or, you know, they cannot stop looking after children. They cannot stop looking after the four or five people who are in the house. So obviously the health of the woman is compromised. So it just begins from there. It's, you know, the physical health and the mental health, and it, you know, ultimately impacts the whole family and the whole ecosystem. So it is really hard to get up from every negative impact. That is the biggest difference between rural and urban India. It is very hard to take the impact at the village level.
Yes, I agree. And as you had mentioned earlier in one of your live sessions, that the onus to bridge the gender disparity lies not only with the government or with the corporates, but also at our individual levels. We have to take charge by being aware and raising our voice for the right thing. The thoughts you shared with us has definitely made us aware about rural India and its women. We hope that our audience has been really encouraged and inspired by this talk with Sahithi Devi. We wish that her journey of bridging gender gaps through rural innovations further proliferates and grows stronger. We thank you for being the trailblazer for us women. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Thank you so much, the Rural Post and Srishti, for having such a beautiful set of questions. And it's really important that we all collaborate on this level and on deeper levels to multiply the impact that we are creating. And I hope that one day rural India becomes the lighthouse for our country.
Yes, we hope that too. Thank you so much. And for our audience, if you want more such content on unfolding rural India, don't forget to subscribe to our website, theruralpost.org.